This episode is sponsored by SpotX. Later in the episode, Mike Evans, Senior Vice President, Demand Facilitation at SpotX, chats with ad exchangers Zach Rogers about SpotX's best-in-class video advertising technology, what's new in political advertising, what buyers should know about supply path optimization, ways to overcome the impact of COVID-19 on the ad industry, as well as how to prepare for the holiday season.
Welcome to Ad Exchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
Hey guys, it's Zach. So Programmatic I.O. is coming up in October. This is, of course, the world's leading conference on programmatic marketing, now in its ninth year. We've got some incredible speakers lined up, including Tariq Hassan, the Chief Marketing Officer at Petco, Elizabeth Bennett, the VP of Global E-Commerce for the Kraft Heinz Company, and many, many more. We hope that you will visit programmatic.io/NY to learn more and sign up. Discounted rates are now available, but only until September the 11th. So act fast. Visit programmatic.io/NY.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Ad Exchanger Talks. My name is Zach Rogers. I'm the executive editor of Ad Exchanger. So last week, the data-driven marketing giant Merkle said it would merge five of its B2B agencies into a single agency brand. Merkle, DWA, Gyro, B2B International, and Digital Pie are now grouped together under the name Merkle B2B, employing about 1,000 people globally. This happens against the backdrop of consolidation among holding companies and also, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm delighted to be talking with Michael McLaren, Global CEO at Merkle B2B, who is going to tell us what it all means. Michael, welcome.
Thanks, Zach. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Great to have you, and congratulations on this consolidation within your group that seems to create a pretty significant new player globally.
Yes, it's an exciting launch. We've brought together a group of agencies that have had a long history in focusing on the needs of the B2B marketplace. And, spend a lot of time building the kind of integration between these companies so that we can create, integrated solutions. We're drawing on strengths from, the sort of key strengths from each of the agencies. So, from Merkle, we're drawing the data technology integration sort of deep expertise. DWA has, one of the leading B2B media operations, Gyro, long-term B2B advertising agency and sort of brand storyteller. B2B International is the leading B2B focused market research agency. And Digital Pie is one of the fastest growing marketing automation agencies and allows us to drive, that marketing automation throughout the customer journey and have that connected all the way from strategy through to execution. So the group together make, I think, a formidable value proposition for B2B clients looking for the type of solutions that, customers are expecting.
Right. Great. Now, so as I mentioned at the top, we do see consolidation happening within the larger agency environment outside of B2B. And I think there are various reasons for that. One of which might just be that there's less concern among clients over competitive conflict. And really, it's more about, am I activating on my own first-party data and my own technology stack in the most effective way? Competitive concerns aren't as front and center. First of all, do you agree that that's something that's happening in the larger agency environment? And secondly, is that in play here? Are clients just less worried about competition? So you're able to have two, for example, marketing software platforms as clients or something like that?
I think there's a number of factors driving the move towards consolidation. I think, first of all, if the consolidation is purely a cost-saving play that does happen. I think that the client is probably going to be underwhelmed by the resulting experience, if it's just being driven by cost considerations. If the consolidation is about delivering more, a better, richer set of services and capabilities, then in that environment, I think the consolidation makes sense and will be received positively by clients and prospects alike. You know, it's difficult for clients to build the type of fully integrated, connected, omni-channel experiences that are increasingly becoming table stakes. It really takes a village, and it's a combination of different approaches that we've seen, you know, everything from in-housing certain elements to outsourcing others. So in building those integrated solutions, I think that clients are looking for, you know, to your point, they're looking for how can I activate off my first party data? How can I build closer relationships with my customer? How can I create a value exchange so that the customer becomes a loyal and committed advocate? You know, so those are the questions. And if the consolidated agency is able to help them deliver answers to those questions, then I think it's going to bring tremendous value. With regards to competitive conflict, that's a slightly separate issue, but definitely one worth discussing. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a history on the advertising agency side. So where, you know, big brands, you know, let's just say Coca-Cola and PepsiCo, just for the sake of, you know, an example, you know, you would not work on both those brands. That was like absolutely never going to happen. And that kind of ethos, if you were running their big advertising campaigns, you're not going to be managing both those brands. And that
still that true, sort of, still true today.
100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But beyond the sort of that level of big brand, you know, storytelling, once you get into the more technology and specific solutions that, you know, we're sort of delivering, conflict is still a consideration, but there's other factors involved in those discussions. You know, the first key is, do you have expertise? Are you bringing something to the table that's of value to the client? Can you protect data confidentiality and information confidentiality? So mm-hmm. are you able to deliver clients secure and reliable service within a strictly confidential environment? And you know, obviously, we are under the same set of sort of scrutiny as all the other agencies, and clients make the decisions that they feel are right for them.
Right.
You know, our strategy is to be completely transparent, to put all of the appropriate, you know, protocols and services in place to satisfy conflict management. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the vast majority of times, clients are satisfied with those solutions.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And it seems to me that big brands, or including big B2B marketers, have gotten a little more used to having their own customer data and assets loaded into the same sort of technology platforms that their competitors are maybe using, you know, so two different makers of wind turbines or trucking services might be both on the Oracle Marketing Cloud or on Salesforce. And so if you're used to that idea of there being, you know, walls up, sort of firewalls up at the tech companies, maybe it's easier to accept that your agency could have competing clients and you could still trust the relationship.
Yeah, I mean, as we move to more of a kind of a SaaS-based world, if you want to be able to be nimble and agile and bring new products to market faster, you're going to have to accept a level of interoperability across these different marketing platforms. And the goal is obviously to secure first-party data, lock that down in a secure, either in a safe harbor or, you know, within your own environment, and then build the on-ramps to the various, you know, applications that you're engaging in a way that's secure and safe for your operations.
Got it.
And I think the consideration of whether my major competitor also uses one of these platforms really starts dropping down the list of concerns. The real concern is my data secure, and can I run this interoperability in a secure and safe way? But, you know, most companies are moving to more nimble environments, whether it's on their data using a CDP kind of platform, or whether it's using an application in the cloud using a software as a service. You know, most big organizations are integrating some of those technologies into their day-to-day playbook.
Okay, great. So would you mind walking us through sort of some of your big clients and which categories are strongest in B2B? For people who may not be intimately familiar with the B2B landscape, where is the largest business there? And which are your largest clients, if you're able to say?
Yeah, I mean, I won't share individual data, but just to give you a sense of the business dynamics. I mean, high tech tends to be B2B in nature. So these are technology companies that are selling either hardware or software or services to other businesses, you know, and obviously there is a consumer side of high tech, but, you know, the sort of the big global piece tends to be B2B in nature. So we have clients in that space like Cisco and Intel and Dell and Samsung. Financial services is also a large B2B business where, you know, large financial organizations are selling services or products to other institutions and companies, and sometimes, you know, obviously down to small and medium business. And we work in this space with companies like, you know, Vanguard and Transamerica. Grant Thornton is another client. Big insurance companies tend to be B2B in nature in many cases, or at least a large percentage of their business. Mm-hmm. Manufacturing is another one. Government is often, you know, a B2G, selling to government.
Yes,
selling
right.
to government is using the same applications and tools. So,
got it.
You know, and even, believe it or not, in consumer packaged goods, you'd probably say, why is that there? Well, if you look at Nestle or Unilever, they have massive commercial businesses that they're selling to other organizations. And once again, they also use B2B, you know, tools and practices in order to facilitate, you know, those businesses. So you'll find B2B scattered in almost every vertical industry, but the ones that I mentioned first are the ones that tend to be predominantly B2B.
How are accounts won? And does the client agency relationship work the same way in B2B that it tends to work in B2C? And are the agency of record relationships like as standard as they have been historically in the B2C side?
Yeah, good question, Zach. Yes, there are AOR relationships, particularly on media. So media is an area where AORs exist. Obviously, there's a large amount of money often in play, so you really need to have a stable and trusted relationship when you're managing clients' money at that scale. Typically, clients will buy a solution that they're looking for or a point solution. So whether it's an activation, you know, I need a brand campaign, I need a demand campaign, I need a account-based marketing program, or they'll buy media solutions. So they'll say, I need a media agency. Mm. They will often spec a technology requirement. You know, we're evaluating our automation platform and we want some proposals on, you know, what would be the next logical step with our marketing automation systems. So they will come into the B2B transaction from different doors. Very often they're looking for a point solution to service a particular need. If it, you know, on the communications and creative side, often that comes to at large companies through the hands of a pitch consultant. So they will put together a list of agencies who could conceivably deliver a solution. And then the client will go through an RFP process hand in hand with that pitch consultant.
I imagine that's when you see a lot of the human side of the business still in play, where a CMO at a big B2B brand runs an RFP, and then, you know, they call in the big guns like you, Michael, to come and woo the CMO and make friends. But I'm joking slightly. But that is kind of historically how some big business can be won, is like, you know, after hours cocktails or like dinner in can or whatever.
The human side is very important, but it's not those the days of the dinner in Cannes and that being the thing that seals the deal. I'm in B2B at least; those days are well gone,
and probably for the best.
A B2B marketer is under a lot of pressure today, particularly today. You know, they have to demonstrate results. You know, so they're not given money by the organization and say, "Hey, we'd like you to build a demand gen campaign and hope it works." It's like, what exactly are these dollars driving? You know, are they driving MQLs? Are they driving SQLs? Like, the level of interrogation of B2B marketing is extreme. So the first thing that a prospective client is going to be looking for is, can this partner deliver solutions that are going to give me evidence and drive results? You know, are they delivering an ROI? Are they delivering against my KPIs? Mm-hmm. That's one of the first filters. So it becomes a very professional engagement. I mean, there's a lot at stake, right, particularly for B2B marketers in making these decisions. So the first thing they'll be doing is evaluating your capabilities. They'll be looking at your relevant examples of where have you done this before? Do you have the expertise that I need? And then they'll be looking at, you know, what kind of systems can you put in place to help me understand how these programs are performing?
How often do you these days win business through a preferred partner relationship with a marketing technology
platform? I mean, through the technology partner?
For example, like a B2B marketer decides they're going to go with a certain platform for their automation, marketing automation, right, or for their sales enablement, or, you know, their marketing cloud or their customer data platform. And then they've done their own technology selection process, and now they need a service partner. And so that platform they've chosen then gives them a list essentially of, hey, these are people who are trained and certified, and we consider them very capable to operate our platform. So, you know, if you need hands on keyboards and strategy for deployment on our platform, work with this agency. So do you see that as a trend? Is that more and more, do you get more leads that way, more clients that way than you used to?
It's definitely an important part of the business. You know, all of the large software businesses, Salesforce, Adobe, you know, et cetera, have a ecosystem of agencies that are at different tiers of delivery. And when they're engaging with large scale businesses, they will make, you know, they will make, do exactly what you're saying. These are the companies who would be capable of delivering what you're looking for. But you still have to go out and win it on your own rights. You know, very rarely is a business given. In fact, you know, I haven't been in that situation. You have to go and earn it, and you've got fantastic competition, you know, that you're doing it against. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we're at a tier level at Adobe that is, you know, going head to head with Accenture and with, you know, IBM Global Services and so on. So, you know, you've got to be at the top of your game to win business in that environment.
So,
I mean, it is an important piece, because clearly there is investment going in these large marketing clouds, and clients are moving a lot of their functionality into those. So, you know, a company like Merkle is a valuable asset because we know how to extract, you know, maximum value from those investments. But we have to go out and earn it. We have to come in with a value proposition and solutions that the client sees is going to get them to the benefit faster.
All right.
But in terms of you know, how do we engage new business opportunities? The other one that's big in B2B, and it makes sense, is, you know, word of mouth. You know, like, a B2B buyer is going to be using his or her network pretty extensively to evaluate options. So if they're looking for a particular solution, they'll be getting feedback from, you know, their peer network. And those recommendations are very, very important. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you always want to make sure that you deliver on every project, because, you know, that client could be an influencing factor down the road,
right,
in another deal.
Gets back to the human side of the business.
100%.
So we're going to take a quick moment break. Moments break here from a sponsor. I'll be right back with Michael McLaren, global CEO of B2B agency Merkle B2B. Hi, I'm talking with Mike Evans, SVP of Demand Facilitation at SpotX, our sponsor for the month. Mike, what are some of the opportunities and challenges that political advertisers are facing this election cycle?
Yeah, we feel like this is the election for CTV. Past cycles, this wasn't as prevalent. So we feel CTV is going to have a major impact on political this time around. The other interesting piece is that social media has really been deprioritizing political ads. So we feel that this is really a huge opportunity to target and reach potential voters with CTV. That and the fact that OTT is growing 4 to 5 times what it was leading up to the last election in 2016, advertisers have the opportunity to reach around 70 million American households through CTV. SpotX specifically has seen political ad spend increase over 315% since the first week in April.
All right. And what should brands and agencies know about supply path optimization?
Yeah, supply path optimization has just been such a hot topic over the last 6 to 8 months. We feel that it's the next evolution of programmatic. Really, what we feel is important for advertisers to vet the supply chain and ensure their transactions are happening in safe and transparent and trustworthy environments. Kind of at the core of this is really to ensure that educated decisions are being made on partnerships. And the way that you can ensure that educated decisions are being made is through data. So providing data to both the buy side and the supply side is imperative to your success in supply path optimization tactics.
All right, Mike, thank you so much. And I'm back with Michael McLaren. So we've been talking about trends in the B2B marketing space. I want to talk a little bit about the impact of the pandemic on B2B. Obviously, the virus has made it harder for all marketers, I think, to do their jobs in a way. It's also created new opportunities. And I'm wondering if you could speak to that. One that we talk about a lot is it's accelerated technology. Things that were going to take 6 years have taken 6 months in terms of adoption of new technology, both by consumers and by marketers who are chasing those consumers into digital environments. I got to believe this represents an opportunity for your clients in the tech vertical to accelerate their businesses. We've seen it in the market caps of the world's largest tech companies. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500, you know, are kind of an indicator there. We've seen, in spite of the economic disaster around the world, we've seen huge growth in stock market, largely driven by tech stocks. Some of these are your clients. So how does this look from your standpoint? Are your clients in the tech space accelerating marketing plans?
Yeah, in general, yes, but it very much depends on the sector that they're focused on. You know, one example that I was tracking, and it's not a client, just to be clear, you know, is Zoom and the whole enablement of video conferencing in a work from home scenario, and just how explosive the growth has been in that area. You know, and all our clients, you know, are. I mean, it's not like it's a universal sort of lift across the board. But, you know, what we have seen is businesses accelerating their technology investments. You know, increasingly customers need to rely or navigate the digital ecosystem in order to get the information and the content and the validation that they need to keep making B2B buying decisions. And, you know, if a company was 100% reliant on a event strategy, which, you know, was always a big piece of B2B, let's face it, in general, events, you know, in 2019 and prior were roughly 40% of a typical B2B company's marketing budget. And all of a sudden, that avenue just got shut down. And there's a couple of important things that happen at events. It's not just, you know, everyone gets together and has a drink. There's a lot of valuable information exchanged. There's very often many deals done, you know, so it's a pipeline business. It's a future relationship business. It's a sales contact business. a very good B2B event is an extremely productive investment for a lot of B2B companies. So with that, at least for the period of time, and now most companies have moved into digital events and they've done a nice pivot about doing it, but we've lost that direct sales contact and it has to be replaced by digital channels. And companies that were advanced in having those digital channels fully enabled have really been, you know, taking full advantage, and companies that weren't are really having to sort of double down their investment and try to play catch up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what we saw at the beginning was marketing budgets, B2B marketing budgets shifted, you know, because the demand generation aspect of B2B events is a very important piece. You had to then start driving that demand elsewhere. So you saw a lot of demand gen programs and online advertising money shifting there. And then it allowed companies to recalibrate their event strategy and start staging for more high quality webinars and content, you know, dissemination. And so now you've got a more balanced environment, all digital or primarily digital, where that event experience is being manifest. And so there's that ongoing contact, but there's also a reliance on other digital channels to continue to drive demand. You know, we've also seen things like, as different industries have been impacted at different rates, companies, you know, who were on their toes have sat back and said, okay, well, you know, if my account-based marketing list was X and these vertical industries are getting hit hard, you know, maybe I should pivot my priority account lists into these vertical industries while the industry is recalibrating. So we saw a pivot in the ABM strategy as well. You know, and I think that companies, you know, our advice with our clients is get up on our toes, you know, to really lean into this environment. Obviously, messaging is a critical piece. It needs to be empathetic. It needs to be empowering. It needs to be, you know, not tone deaf. Mm-hmm. So whatever the, I was going to say woke, but that has other dimensions to it. But it definitely,
probably not.
It definitely can't be tone deaf because, you know, a lot of businesses are struggling out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, to the extent that we can create value, I've seen some tremendous things done by B2B companies. You know, creating unique access to tools that are going to be helpful in a COVID-19 environment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm happy to share some examples that we've been tracking in the industry at large. But,
yeah, please.
You know, I think companies have been smart in how they have, you know, how they have pivoted. And the ones who were ahead of the pack in terms of digital transformation are really reaping significant rewards, because what we've seen is the trends that were in motion before COVID-19 have just accelerated. And then the other thing that is extremely interesting is the move to connected commerce and B2B companies creating commerce channels directly with customers, as opposed to, you know, other forms of transactions that have historically been in place. We think commerce is going to be a boom industry. And, you know, the data supports that. It's not, mm-hmm. you know, it's not just Michael McLaren saying so. It's across the board. We're seeing, you know, 30% growth in B2B commerce. So, yeah. You know, and some of that is direct to customer, you know. So if you like, in the B2C world, DTC brands have sort of transformed a lot of industries. You're going to see DT customer brands transform businesses in B2B.
Okay. What's a good example of that?
I mean, you see it pop up in medium and smaller businesses. So, you know, I think some of the big guys are doing some really interesting things. You know, Amex and the work that they're doing with small businesses, I think, is brilliant. Mm-hmm. You know, enabling small businesses to get access to bigger pools of customers. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just that across the industry, there is a wave, I think, of you'll start seeing more connected commerce examples, and more companies are adding that commerce capability to their existing web experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So other areas of opportunity or pain in the, obviously, like if you're GE selling, you know, jet turbines to airlines, you're hating life right now. We had Linda Boff on the podcast recently talking about the sudden challenging environment for GE and where they're seeing some silver linings too. But where have you been kind of kneecapped, or where do you see diminishing opportunities in light of the pandemic?
I mean, I think that the travel industry has been hard hit, mm-hmm. you know, and then travel has a lot of business to business dimensions to it. So for the folks who have been, you know, involved in that side of the industry, travel and hospitality, you know, I think that that's going to be depressed for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, certainly, you know, but it also is a time when long-term investments in, you know, some of the digital enablement capabilities that they're going to need in the future, you know, they're still taking place. And, you know, a big tech project typically is a 12 to 18 month endeavor. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, and that's even given all best will in the world and, you know, the wind at your back. So the longer that you delay that, the longer it is before you get that benefit.
Right.
So, you know, but yeah, I think travel, hospitality, entertainment, these industries have really, they've really been hard sure. hit. You know, tech, you know, hardware, et cetera, they seem to have weathered the storm a little bit better. Software, hardware, the big platforms, because those tech investments are going to pay out over a longer time frame and companies can't afford to wait.
You mentioned that with the loss of events, there's a shortage of good intelligence that people used to get, and there's these kind of chance meetings and, you know, coffee yep. encounters and cocktail happy hour encounters. People would have, they would share gossip, and then eventually they would do business. So what is happening, you know, what's replacing that? Or is there less business being done and less gossip being shared overall? Is it just irreplaceable in a way? Obviously, you spoke to that a few minutes ago, talking about, you know, companies like frankly, like ours, shifting to virtual events and having some success there, but you can't replace that chance meeting easily. So
I mean, it is interesting. We've been studying this. I saw some fascinating data from a company called Path Factory a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about the different content that is now being consumed by B2B buyers pre-COVID and post-COVID. And what they've seen is that there are more shorter visits to the .com. There is more content being consumed, but it's smaller, shorter form factor. The implication being that if you're able to create high quality content that's easily consumable, you know, and in a form that is readily available, then it's going to get consumed. And so I think what that tells you is that buyers or prospective buyers are out there hunting. You know, they're looking at the .com, they're doing searches, and they're pulling down, you know, grazable content, and they're going back. They had a data point on what they call bingers versus non-bingers, and a binger was defined in their study as people who had consumed more than one piece of content. And what they found was that the binger, the person that's coming in and consuming two pieces of content in one visit, was twice as likely to ultimately make a purchase. So then the game becomes, how can I quickly move them from content A to content B? How do I connect those? Which is kind of, if you like, the digital replacement of that conversation mm-hmm. in the hallway. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, you might be interested in getting some more detail on X, and then trying to facilitate that exchange in a seamless fashion in a digital world. I think we're seeing companies get very creative about mm-hmm. how they do it. You know, like one technology that is fascinating to me is video and video content, and how can you, you know, first of all, cheaply develop large scale video content that's easily grazable, easily discoverable, but provides quick hits of information and some kind of sight, sound, and motion exchange that has more emotional context, I think we're going to see video explode in the way B2B marketers get their message across. And you know, I could also get into a conversation about the impact of millennials and Gen Zs, but you know, bear in mind they're becoming an increasingly important cohort within the total B2B buying audience. And you know, they're digital natives. They're very good at navigating digital landscapes. They're very good at blocking irrelevant content, and they consume video content in a very comfortable fashion, often on their phone. So, you know, I think the table stakes are rising for B2B marketers to get more creative. It's one of the reasons why we're excited about connecting Giro with Merkle and with DWA, because we're able to pull that emotional engagement all the way through the digital ecosystem so that we can have a brand emotional connection with the customer in any touch point. And I think that you're going to keep seeing more influence of that millennial audience as they become an increasingly significant player in the B2B landscape.
Trails consumer marketing trends a little bit. So it makes sense that things that were kind of sort of at the heart of urgency for consumer marketing a few years ago, optimizing your content and your messaging for mobile, social marketing and content development on issues that matter to your customers, are now increasingly urgent in B2B because, hey, yeah, somebody who was 25 in 2010 when the iPhone was new is now 35, and they are a decision maker for you know, an energy company or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I mean, we have data that at the senior director level in a classic B2B organization, and you know, every decision making unit in a B2B company is unique, but typically there's a quarterback that's jockeying the process. And it's very often a senior director of a line of business. That senior director, there are more 35 and below senior directors than 35 and above or 36 and above. Yeah. So not only are these individuals important, but they are now the predominant share of that quarterback role. So we better understand how they like to engage with businesses, you know. The way that I often tell clients, it's like the customer is in control. You know, that has happened. They are going to engage with you in a manner of their choosing, at a time of their choosing, in a channel of their choosing. Our role is to ensure that that experience is first quality, you know, first of all, top quality. Secondly, valuable so that it's relevant to them. And ideally, it's personalized so that it's tuned to who they are and what they do. You know, and that's another reason why we're building Merkle B2B is that in order to create customized, personalized, valuable experiences, it requires the integration of data, technology, and creativity to bring that all together. You can't do it without all those pieces working.
All right. Well, that sums it up nicely. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I wish you all the best with the new agency brand.
Thanks so much, Zach. It's great to have a chance to talk, and we look forward to sharing our successes in the future.
And thank you, listener, for tuning in to yet another episode of this podcast. We'll see you next time.
SpotX is the leading video advertising and monetization platform shaping digital video and the future of TV globally. Their solutions enable media owners to monetize content across all screens and streams while providing advertisers with direct access to brand-safe premium inventory. Learn more about how SpotX can help you achieve your video advertising goals at spotx.tv.